Welcome to Panelcast, Forbidden Panels podcast featuring comic books, video games, and movie news and reviews. And now, your host, AJ Herrera.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 162 of the Panelcast. We're so happy to have you here this week. My name is AJ. I'm your host, as always, and with me is Anthony.
Hey, everybody. Back again. And this time around, AJ and I have our usual news bit for you. AJ conducts a special interview with one of our own, and we've got reviews of Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders and Uncharted 4 coming your way right after this break. You don't know the half of the
abuse. Hi everyone, Robert here at QBC Toys and More, inviting you to visit our store in Victorville. We are the premier comic, toy, and collectible store in the high desert. Sign up for our comic pull list service and never miss an issue again. Like us on Facebook to stay up to date on sales, promotions, and events. Mention this podcast in the store to receive 10% off your total purchase. QBC Toys and More. Yes, we have candy too. Located on Hesperia Road, next to the Tri-City Car Wash. Please don't forget.
Welcome back, everybody. It is time again for our news segment, and this time around, AJ is going to be starting us off. What have you got for them, AJ?
Well, even before the idea was turned into a comic in 2007, talk of a film in which Freddy Krueger from Nightmare on Elm Street, Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th, and Ash Williams from The Evil Dead would come together had been swirling around, both before and after the release of 2003's Freddy vs. Jason. Nothing's ever eventuated, and Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash ultimately went way of various vanished but often talked about projects, like Megalopolis, Night Skies, The Hot Zone, Crusade, and The Sky is Falling. This week, out doing promotion for the second season of Ash vs. Evil Dead, Ash himself, actor Bruce Campbell, was asked in a Reddit AMA about what happened to the film. Quote, "I'll be honest with you, I'm not real interested in crossovers. One of the main reasons why AVJVF did not come to pass is because we couldn't control any other character other than Ash. That felt like a creatively bankrupt way to go. Not to mention, you're splitting the proceeds three ways with partners you may not want," end quote. End quote. Campbell these days is busy with Ash vs. Evil Dead, which is now in its second season run and has already been renewed for a third season. Now, as a comic book fan and a fan of all things mentioned in this article, I picked up the comic book and I thought it was pretty awesome. I was even excited to see it on film because, you know, we all love crossovers. Who doesn't? But to hear
evidently
that...
Bruce Campbell.
Right. Well, Bruce Campbell is stupid. Anyway. but the fans would have liked to have seen it, and I know I would have liked to have seen it, so it's just too bad it didn't come to fruition. However, nowadays, I mean, come on, if freaking Sharknado can get a movie, I don't see why this couldn't get a movie. Maybe they could even use some of the rebooted stuff, like, you know, Rob Zombie's Michael Myers, or the new Freddy Krueger, or what have you, to get in there. But, I don't know, I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching all of those films, so it would have been cool to see all of them kind of mashed together and see the chaos that ensued. It would be just a fun ride.
My son's favorite movie to watch every time he came over to stay with me on the weekend was Freddy vs. Jason. Like, he would watch that nonstop. I wondered, like, why was something wrong with him, and then I just realized I raised him right. So, what else you got? Or what do you have?
I have is something interesting. It's more of a hope at this point, an outside dream. But if you watched Watchmen or were a fan of Supernatural or The Good Wife, then you know who Jeffrey Dean Morgan is.
And, if you're watching The Walking Dead right now.
Oh, didn't know that. Okay. And if you caught it, which for some reason in two watchings I didn't, he had a quick cameo as Thomas Wayne in Zack Snyder's Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. Well, CinemaBlend had a little interview with him talking to him about the role and his hopes and his dreams and you know, the maybes and why nots. And what Jeffrey Dean Morgan had to say on the subject was, maybe when Zack Snyder cast me, that was kind of the goal, as to playing Thomas Wayne in a Flashpoint instance. Hopefully DC can figure that this all out, and in a few years I can come back and do a Flashpoint Batman. I would love it. That would be great. I mean, it's interesting. His presence, and, well, honestly, I like the Flashpoint storyline, and Thomas Wayne and his rendition of Batman is kind of nuts. So,
especially if you watch the animated feature and you got to see, like, the action and the fact that he was toting guns and yeah.
Yeah, Flashpoint Batman was, he didn't have the scruples that our normal Batman has. He went above and beyond when it came to protecting Gotham City. But to be fair,
especially when his wife turned into the Joker.
But yeah, the denizens of Gotham were a little more destructive than we're used to. So it was just on par. He was just kind of keeping in flow with it. Honestly, it would be cool to see him play Thomas Wayne, play that rendition of Batman. There's no confirmation so far as to whether or not a Flashpoint movie is on the horizon or if we'll get to see him take up this role. But Morgan actually said that Snyder's responsible for putting the idea in his head in the first place. When they were working on Watchmen and they were shooting things for that, and he was having dinner with Snyder during one of their conversations, it sort of came up, and he's quoted as saying, "I've not had any big discussions with him about Flashpoint, but I remember when we were in Australia doing Watchmen press, and I was having dinner with Zach or whatever, and he was like, my dream is to do the Frank Miller Batman, and he goes, you would be an awesome Batman, the darker version." So if DC can work it out, I'd love to see it, because I think it would be awesome. That Flashpoint Batman is just crazy, and the action is over the top, and his presence on screen, I think he would nail it.
And give it up. Give him props for knowing what the fuck Flashpoint Batman is.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, sure, Zach may have brought up the idea, but Jeffrey Dean Morgan knows what Flashpoint Batman is, which leads me to believe he's a comic book geek in some way, shape, or form. So,
and that is all important in playing these roles, a love of the characters and an understanding of what their portrayal should be is vital to a proper rendition on screen.
Yep.
All right. What have you got, AJ?
Well, following the huge reveal that Boyd Holbrook's role is that of a Reaver, of the Reaver creator Donald Pierce in the upcoming third solo Wolverine movie called Logan, more details have popped up on two other key roles in the X-Men spinoff franchise. Last week, Hugh Jackman and director James Mangold revealed the title for the film and a poster that shows Wolverine's clawed hand holding the small hand of a child. The Wrap reports that the girl is a young mutant played by Sienna Novikov, and the character's name is Laura, a.k.a. X-23. Multiple sources have confirmed the character is also, yeah, like I just said, the mutant known as X-23, effectively a female Wolverine in the comics, as she has had the same regenerative healing reflexes and strength enhancements, along with retractable adamantium-coated bone claws. The key difference is hers are two-pronged, not three, and they also come out of her feet. See, in this reporting, they're actually wrong. She does have three claws. Two come out of her knuckles, and one comes from her wrist on the inner side. So, shame on you guys for not knowing that. In the film, which is set in 2024, mutant births are severely declined and people aren't sure why. A government operation called Transigen is turning mutant children into killing machines. The outlet says that Richard E. Grant's role as the mad scientist behind Transigen is not Mr. Sinister, as some had rumored. Indeed, Grant is playing Dr. Xander Rice, the surgical head of the project, which created X-23 from notes left by his late father, who was killed by an escaping Wolverine as he fled the Weapon X facility. The site adds that Mr. Sinister will not appear in the film, but that doesn't rule out the possibility of a post-credit scene as an X-Men Apocalypse. Logan will be released in March 3rd. Now, I am having mixed feelings about this because they have obviously taken the Wolverine lore, the James Howlett background of Wolverine, and just wrapped it in shit and shit on it. With some shit paper all over it. Now, that's not saying I don't enjoy the films. I do. And Hugh Jackman's portrayal of the character, while the height discrepancy is there, I have to give him credit that the man owns it. And he gives his all for portraying that character. 17 years playing that character, and he's done a great job. That's like the lifetime of some of our listeners. But, like, as much as I would have liked to have seen in any of these films any true rendition of the books and stories that we are familiar with, I'll just have to take what I can with this and hope that it is a great movie and a great story. Seeing X-23, that's going to make me happy, even though I already know it's not the same X-23 that we're used to. The one that was a prostitute, the one that was experimented on, the one that has to be brought back from her feral side all the time. We're not going to see that, which is too bad. But
it is what happens, though. I mean, the comic book characters that we all grew up with, the storylines we all grew up with, in order to make them fit and mold them properly for audiences, Marvel has done, well, not just Marvel, DC, Image, everybody has done a crap ton of tweaking to get these characters onto the screen. So,
but it always feels like Wolverine takes the biggest hit because he is the biggest draw right now. And so with all the attention focused on him, do you think they would try to get a couple details right?
Yeah, but they've already screwed up so many.
I know. The only saving grace of this film so far that I've seen is the photo they've released of Professor X showing... oh my God, I can't remember his name. Showing Professor X, Patrick Stewart, thank you, as an older, demented, frail, broken down Professor X who just looks like he's staring off into space with deep scars and liver spots all over his face, and he just looks like he's incoherent. That picture right there is saying the 1,000 words that it needs to say. And right now, that's the only saving grace that I'm feeling for this upcoming film. Hopefully, as we see more trailers and more news come out, I might get more on the bandwagon, but I wouldn't hold my breath. Anthony?
Yeah, what I've got is something that runs along similar lines. Now, some people might be all behind this, but before I editorialize, let me just run it out. If any of you are fans of the DC, of the CW show Supergirl, then you know about the character of Jimmy Olsen and how he's portrayed and what his role is in that world and that universe. Well, the actor Michaud Brooks, who portrays Jimmy Olsen, revealed via social media the outfit that he's going to be donning as the Guardian. In a quote from executive producer Andrew Kreisberg, these next few episodes are going to make James realize that being a photographer is not enough for him. So he's going to go on a pretty exciting career trajectory that we're really pumped by. James is going to decide that he can no longer sit back and be a sidekick. So he's going to decide to become a vigilante. As someone that's been a DC fan in one aspect or another all his life, this rubs me wrong in a whole lot of ways. Not just because Jimmy Olsen was never the Guardian, but because of the role Jimmy Olsen has always played in a superpowered world. It just doesn't sit well. Jimmy has always been the quintessential human. He's always been the guy that's struggled to get by and do what's right and just kind of keep going in light of a city inhabited by superpowered beings. I mean, the guy is from Metropolis, for Christ's sake. And he knows that there's a big gap between human and superhuman, but he's always strived to do what's right and do the best he can as a human being. That is Jimmy Olsen. This is separating him from that by saying, well, I'm not a superhero, but I'm more than just a human being. I don't know what to do with that. I mean, it's confounding in a lot of ways for me.
First off, sure, Jimmy Olsen has donned a lot of different superhero names in the past. Starting in 1956 with Speed Demon, Radioactive, Superbrain, Gorilla, Elastic Lad, Fire Breather, Wolfman. But all of these have been like, you know, accidents, or he happened to get caught doing something, or, you know, he got infected with something, or what have you. To bring this kind of a character out is only reflective of the fact that they cast Mashaud Brooks as Jimmy Olsen. Whereas when I think of Olsen, I think of him as this tiny, frail photographer guy, ginger, freckles, the whole nine, evil gingers. Mashaud Brooks is a very tall, in shape, black guy, athletic build, the whole nine. So had they have done something where they cast a weaker looking person, maybe they could have, you know, not had to worry about this part. But now that he's on the CW, and like I said, he's a in shape guy, making just having him be eye candy isn't enough for the CW. They just want to beef him out and put a costume on him. I think it's just ridiculous, and it just gives them what I've been saying all this time: just lack of faith in their writers.
It's just not Jimmy. It's a mantle he's never worn. No matter how many mantles he may have worn over the years, it's just not Jimmy. Mm. But moving on from that, what else have you got, AJ?
Well, in the last bit of news I have, author J.K. Rowling has announced that Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the first of the upcoming Harry Potter spinoff, will not be the start of a trilogy after all. Instead, the author revealed during a fan screening and cast Q&A that was broadcast live on the film franchise's Facebook page. Man, I could have said that a lot better.
Too many Fs.
Yeah. That today the plan is for a total of 5 movies. Rowling penned the screenplay for the first and has already done much of the work on the sequel due for 2008. That film will be set in an increasingly dark time for the Wizarding World, where Newt and our other heroes have to decide on their allegiance. Really, JK? 5 more movies? You're just not... I think what's happening is all of the other books that she's written outside of the Harry Potter universe has taken a shit. And she's decided, well, billions of dollars is not enough for me. I need more. So I'm just going to keep on doing this and milking that goat until it's a skinny-ass, bone-dry piece of beef jerky. Yeah.
But honestly, we don't know. As we haven't seen the first film yet, it may be that there's enough material there to support it.
Hey, look, I'm speaking out of bitterness, okay? I love the stuff. I'm pissed off. I got to pay more money, okay? At some point in time, she needs to, like, I want to go get a Death Eater tattoo, you know, so that when I go see these movies and they look at my Death Eater tattoo, that I can get in for free or something. I think that's a fair trade, greedy bitch.
Get inked up with the Death Eater symbol and get in for free.
Yep.
Well, with as much money as I've spent, tattoo would be cheaper.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, if you show up at Forbidden Panels booth and you've got a ZKS tattoo, you are getting free shit. Just letting you guys know. And so I should be the same way. If Rowling decides she wants to write more movies and create more Harry Potter stuff, awesome. When I get my Death Eater tat, I better get some shit for free. That's all I'm saying. And that about wraps up the news segment for us. we'll go ahead and take a quick break. Now, when we come back, I will be sitting down with Janelle Vendeville, one of the writers and columnists on the Forbidden Panel website, as she has a little something special for everybody to enjoy during the Halloween season. I'll be right back.
Hi, this is Vanessa with Blackbird Bows, inviting you to visit my website at blackbirdbows.com, where you can find 100% original and customized bows for every occasion. That's blackbirdbows.com.
Welcome back to the panelcast. So, in this segment, I'm going to take some time and speak to one of the writers for our website, Miss Janelle Vendeville. How are you doing, Janelle?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for asking. But then again, I'm not one that watched a horror movie in the middle of the afternoon and may have had an effect on my whole day.
Yeah, it's been interesting.
So Janelle is our managing editor on the website. She's in charge of making sure all of our writers and whatnot get their work in on time, making sure everything's edited properly, and then yells at them if she needs to. So it's really, really fun job for her, I'm guessing.
It is really fun.
Also, she is a writer on the website. Right now, one of the more popular ones. She decided to take this month of October and do something really special. Janelle, why don't you tell us what you're doing?
This month, I am writing a series on horror movies that can and usually do affect parents or people who are around kids a lot. So my series is every day we cover a new movie, and it's a horror film countdown of the movies that anxious parents in particular should avoid.
Give us an example. What's today's entry?
Today's entry, well, I'm still working on today's entry. I'll tell you what yesterday's entry was.
Okay.
Let's see. What was yesterday? What was yesterday? Oh, yeah. Yesterday was we covered It, the Stephen King movie miniseries from back in the day. In particular, we covered not only the scary clown factor, but also the fact that storm drains are scary and kids can fall inside of them, and also the fact that there are a bunch of clowns in the news right now. And when we watch these horror movies, we don't necessarily think about how they're going to affect us in the rest of our lives, and then suddenly they do.
But I mean, why storm drains? Don't all the kids just float down there?
No, they don't.
Oh, okay. So that's another lie that the movie industry has told us.
Of course.
Okay, just checking. Now, what drove you to write this?
A couple things, actually. One of them was, it's no secret amongst the people who know me personally that I struggle with anxiety and have, particularly since I've had children. Before I had kids, I was a huge movie fan. I was a huge horror movie fan, and it was a major part of my life in October. I would always make a point to watch multiple horror movies every single day in October just to celebrate the month. And then once I had kids, I couldn't watch any at all because every single movie that I saw would deeply affect me as a mother, and I couldn't watch them. I couldn't even have certain ones in the house. There are some movies that I have in the garage in a box that stay there, and that's where they live because I don't want them in the house. So this was kind of for me to cross that bridge. One of the best ways that we can overcome an anxiety is to confront it. And by confronting it with a air of levity and comedy, we can more safely approach those topics. And so I thought this would be a good way for me to kind of do that.
So instead of worrying about the kids in your house watching these movies and the effect that the movies would have on them, you're more concerned with how the movies would affect you as a mother in mothering, basically.
It does affect me as a mother. There are certain things that I don't let them do because the images that I have in my head of what will happen if they do those things come directly from movies that I've seen. Or it will inspire like this downward spiral of terrible things that could happen that are coming from these images from movies that I've seen 20, 25 years ago. So I'm not as concerned because we don't watch them around the kids. So that's not really an issue. I'm not worried about them because they're not going to be watching them. They're never in the house when I watch horror movies.
The research for this, did you actually talk to any other parents about their anxiety issues or how the horror movies affected them as parents?
I did put out the call, and I asked a couple people who I know in the past had been horror fans, and most of them basically had the same thing to say, that they actually no longer watch those kinds of movies. And if they do, it's deeply disturbing, and it takes days to get it out of their head.
Now, what has been some of the feedback that you've gotten since putting out these articles?
So far, it's all been really positive. People think they're funny, which is good. That was the point. I've been concerned about that because these are actually real issues for me, but I'm presenting them in a way that I get to laugh at myself about it. And so I always worry, am I actually conveying the humor of this? And it's not just like, oh, wow, she's really disturbed. So thankfully, it is being presented in that way, and people are getting that it's a funny thing, that it's supposed to be funny. And so that's been nice. So far, it's been pretty positive.
Okay, so you said that you're doing this as kind of a catharsis for you and to help you deal with the anxiety. Has that actually helped?
I think so. I think today was my proof of that. This is the first time I've watched a movie of this nature in a very long time. Years.
And what movie was that?
Today I watched The Conjuring.
And you had not seen that before?
I have not seen that before. That was one that I particularly, like, I knew to stay away from that one. So I didn't watch it on purpose.
In watching the movie today, though, did you see any potential triggers? Did you maybe take notes for a potential future column? Did you think that this movie would make your list?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely, I think it will. One of the reasons I wanted to watch it was because I had considered adding it to the list, but I had never seen it. So I couldn't talk about it without actually having watched it. So that was why I wanted to go ahead and do that this time around. And I gave it a shot. There were some definite issues there. It was more sad to me than anything else, though. Like, I mean, yeah, it was really some excellent, excellent scares in this movie. It was just beautiful and terrifying and awesome, but also really sad. From a mother's perspective, it was really, really deeply sad to me.
Yeah, you feel bad for the family that all of this is happening to.
Yeah. Well, not just their family.
Right.
The families that it had happened to before also.
Right. So, going back, you say that you used to watch horror movies every day in October. You love horror movies. What got you started with horror movies?
That's a great question. Let's see. There were a handful of movies that I had seen growing up, but I had not really had any experience with horror movies at all until I met two brothers who became very good friends of mine, and that's Sean and Cameron Dortch, and they really introduced me to the world of horror movies. I saw all of the Night of the Living Dead movies with them. I saw all of the Friday the 13th movies with them. The Nightmare on Elm Street movies were all introduced to me by them. Most of the classic horror films that I had never had the opportunity to see when I was younger were movies that I saw all at their house.
What is it about horror movies that attracts you?
A couple different things. One is they almost every movie, every horror movie has a resolution. Almost every horror movie. It's the ones that don't that really bite you. But I love that when that happens. There is always an element of personal safety that is affected when you watch these movies. And it gives you some sort of barrier between actual danger and your own life. It makes you feel very grateful for what you do have. And it makes you feel much safer in your real life when you can leave all of that at the theater and go back into your normal life. Like, well, you know, at least Michael's not going to chase me home. So, you know, that's a win. Also, the makeup design is something that I've always really, really loved exploring. I grew up in theater. I grew up learning special effects makeup, and I love, love, love watching how these incredible artists can create these things and put them out on film and just make them look so real that it genuinely makes you want to throw up. Like, if it makes you look, if it makes you want to throw up, that's a really good piece of art, and I just have such a deep appreciation for that.
And yet we didn't see you at the Zombie Beauty Pageant. What happened there?
Which one?
I meant competing.
Oh, competing. Oh, well, because I had babies. I was busy.
Well, that sounds like a personal problem.
Usually is.
So, give me your top five horror movies of all time. Oh, and whether or not they've made your list and where they made them.
Oh my gosh. That's a really hard question. Top five. Wow. I hate doing these top five things because I have, there's just so many to choose from. It's so hard for me to pick. Well, The Ring is definitely in the list. Let me see. The Shining.
Which one?
The original one.
Stanley Kubrick?
Yeah.
Okay. Would it be easier to ask, what is your number one top horror movie of all time?
No. Final Destination is on the list. The Grudge is on the list.
That's four.
Man. Yeah, thanks. I guess Night of the Living Dead would have to be on the list.
Good choices. Two Japanese movies. Two classics. What is it about the Asian horror films that gets you?
They tend to just be really beautifully crafted ghost stories. The thing that I've always really loved about those movies in particular is that they have just enough of an element of sadness about them that you actually feel empathy for the monster in a way that makes you even more terrified of them, because that empathy is what draws them even closer to you and gives them even more opportunity to kill you. And it's a really twisted kind of conflict that is really beautifully written every single time. And the Ringu movies were, because they were based loosely on a true story, that also gave it an element of extra element of terror there.
Now, you and I saw the first Ring movie together. And what was the most memorable moment of that night? For me, it was seeing that big gangbanger get up and say, fuck this, and run out the theater. That was the most... And his girlfriend chased him, don't leave me and her alone.
Yep, that was pretty awesome. That was a really good day. That was a really, really good day. Honestly, the most memorable part of it for me was going home and not being able to sleep and not being able to look at any televisions. Like, I literally could not look at a television for more than a few seconds without this, like, wave of dread just filling me up and choking me. It was just awful. I stared at the wall for hours.
My other favorite part is the fact that, you know, when you guys moved into your new home, I went on your mirror and wrote 7 days.
And
then,
yeah.
And then it freaked you out.
Yeah, you know how long it actually took me to find that? Weeks. Weeks. Before I actually saw that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So you're 14 entries in.
Mm-hmm.
14 movies in. What can we expect from the last 15, 16?
Well, we're going to go kind of all over the place. I've been trying to kind of follow a little bit of a path. give clues every day as to what's going to come up next. But we're going to go all over. We're going to go all over from, you know, the undead to maybe some more demons to some aliens even. There's a lot of places to cover and not a lot of days left to do it. So I've got a lot of ground to cover, and I'm going to try to do my best. But at this point, what I thought was going to be hard to get to a whole 31, now I'm having to scale back and combine movies into categories instead, because there are just so many that I want to cover.
And how does your family feel about your horror addiction? Husband, kids?
Which part of my family? My immediate... my. Well, Craig thinks it's hilarious. My husband thinks it's funny. He's actually really surprised that I am going through all of this right now, that I've been willing to do this. He came home from work today, and I'm sitting there curled up in a ball watching The Conjuring, and he's like, "Wow, you're really watching that?" I'm like, "Yep, I'm really doing it." And he's like, "Okay." And he came down and sat with me and watched the rest of it with me.
And your not-so-immediate family? Parents, brothers, sisters?
Well, you can't tell them. Shh, it's a secret.
Oh, so they can't read any of your articles or anything?
No, they actually don't. As far as I know, anyway. If they are reading them, they're not telling me that they're reading them, so I have no idea. My mom has always thought the whole horror thing was kind of ridiculous, so it was kind of the roll your eyes, pat you on the head, and walk the other way kind of thing with her when it came to scary movies with me. So,
one last question. You also write another blog. As a mom, are you cross-posting?
This actually started as a blog for that page. It was just 13, and I just did 13 movies that I thought were films that affected me as a mom with anxiety, and I thought it would be kind of a fun list to go through some of them for October, and I just kind of left it at that. So this was there first. And it got zero comments, and I think about 5 people have read it.
And since then, we've had a lot more than 5 read it.
Which is very exciting. It's very cool.
Well, all right, Janelle, what was the name of the blog again?
Oh, The Cautious Mom.
The Cautious Mom. And the name of the article on the Forbidden Panel site?
Is the horror film Countdown, movies anxious parents should avoid.
So when everybody gets a chance, when you're obviously not listening to this podcast, head on over to Forbidden Panel, check out Janelle's columns, and get as excited as we are. She goes really in-depth and talks about a lot of real mental issues that she has. I mean that in the sweetest, endearing way.
Mm-hmm.
But join her in her journey as she gets to number 31. It should be a lot of fun. And I, for one, am anxious to see where it's going, knowing that I also had a little bit of influence in her horror movie upbringing.
So, a lot of influence.
Little influence. Cause I'm
a
short.
Lot of influence.
So, all right. Well, I'm going to toss it back over to myself and Anthony and the rest of the panel cast. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Thank you, Janelle, for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll catch everybody after this break.
Bye.
Happy llama, sad llama, mentally disturbed llama, super llama, drama llama, big fat mama llama.
Happy llama. Hi, this is Joey Labartnick, and you can check out my latest comic, A Man Called Kraken, at comixology.com. And be sure to keep checking the Forbidden Panel website, because you're going to be able to see my artwork in the upcoming Volume 2. Of Forbidden Tales.
It's me, bitch. Yes, I am that llama.
Welcome back, everybody. It is time again for us to go through our review segment with you. This time around, AJ will be starting us off, and you've got a little bit on Uncharted 4 for everybody, right?
Hopefully more than a little bit. Maybe a lot of it. I spent the past 3 or 4 days playing Uncharted 4. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the franchise, Uncharted is a game series that's very similar to Indiana Jones, Lara Croft type of tomb raiding, treasure hunting type of story and gameplay. In it, you find the hero, Nathan Drake, who is supposed to be a distant relative of Sir Francis Drake, gallivanting across the planet, just searching for clues and treasures and whatnot. I've been playing the game since 1. I played 1 and 2. I kind of skipped out on 3 because I just wasn't in the headspace for it. But both games were enjoyable, fun, beautiful, and easy to get along with. In comparison to Tomb Raider, the game is more... You can jump on stuff. You don't have to be perfectly lined up in order to grab onto the cliffs or the rocks or make jumps or what have you. This has a more flowing motion with it. Even to where, like, you can zigzag and you see Nathan, like, you know, stumble a little bit or get down on all threes and or what have you, as far as gameplay goes. The first game was about him hunting down his namesake, Sir Francis Drake. The second game was about El Dorado. The third game, I believe, was about the Fountain of Youth. I'm not too sure because, again, I didn't play it. I might be getting some of them mixed up, but, you know, I'm old. What do you want? What do you expect from me? I hate you guys. Anyway. And so here we are on 4, and he is hunting down the coveted Treasure Island. The famous island that became a pirate's paradise, a place for them to live and to walk freely without having wanted signs or having a bounty on their head, and a place for them to hide and store all of their treasures and money and whatnot. They even developed their own banking system there. And, yeah. So, anyway. The game itself is, again, absolutely gorgeous and stunning. There came times where I had to pause the game and just look at everything. Like, I couldn't help it. I had to, as soon as I got on top of any type of mountain or peak, I would just look around and admire just how gorgeous this game was. It's just so beautiful. Even so much that I took pictures and sent them to Anthony to be like, look what I'm doing. Look, this is awesome.
Yeah. And there's a glitch to that. The glitch is, well, the rendering is so fantastic. You don't want to be sitting inside playing a game anymore. Those pictures made me be like, man, I need to go out into the wilderness and just get lost for a couple of days just so I can see something that remotely resembles this.
Right. I mean, the caves and the caverns and the islands and the forest and the haciendas and everything about it, just beautiful. There's a part where I'm cruising along on a boat trying to get to an island, and I swear I felt the wind in my hair. Or what was left of my hair. To say that they pulled out all the stops for this game would be an understatement in how far the beauty was. There came a point while I'm playing this game when I realized I didn't care about getting all the hidden items or the hidden treasures or whatnot. If I unlocked the secret thing or got any type of, you know, new outfit or uniform for Nathan, I just wanted to finish it for the story. It was just that enveloped. I was just that enveloped into the storyline. I didn't care about anything else. I just wanted to find out what happened to Nathan Drake at the end. And I just wanted to see the adventures and enjoy the adventures he was going on. And I wanted to journey with him to all the different locales that he was going to and meet all the people that he had met. That's the markings of a great game, to where you don't care about anything else except for the story. And for me, it brought me in. And as a writer, I had to respect it.
Well, as far as storytelling goes, was it like linear story elements, or was it a more organic thing that the story evolved and pieces kind of fit together as you discovered this or that or completed this mission or that mission?
It's not like it's an open world game. It has a linear storyline and a passage that you have to take. But the journey in itself is fun to get to. No, you can't advance unless you do certain things. So sometimes you would have to go back and whatnot. Luckily, I'm good enough that I didn't have that problem of having to go back. But because I know what clues to look for, you know, so that I'm not just wandering around bumping my head in the stupid stuff. So it felt natural and organic, as you said. But even the characters in the game themselves would come across points where they would have to travel to another locale. And they were like, really? We have to go somewhere else? Like, this is getting ridiculous. You know, and to make fun of yourself in the game is to truly understand what you're doing.
Yeah, and to be able to do it and not have it come off as, you know, corny or contrived.
Right, because even at that same point, I'm like, man, really? I figured the game would be over by now. And so they have the character say the same thing. I was like, okay, good. I feel you. We're good. We are truly on the same page now. So, yeah, like, there you have it. It's sad that this is the last entry into the Uncharted franchise, but it was a good way for it to go. Even staying to play the epilogue, which I won't reveal, is kind of worth it. You want to check it out because it ties all the stories together, and it really says goodbye.
Is this the kind of game that someone unfamiliar with the Uncharted series can drop into and enjoy?
Yes. You can. There might be a character here and there where you're just like, oh, okay. But it comes fully fleshed out throughout the series, throughout the game itself.
Okay, so it doesn't entirely rely on the three previous entries to prop it up.
No.
It stands well on its own.
Yeah, but it does bring up the previous three kind of like as a joke. Like, you know, I can't give too much away because it'll ruin the whole game. But
right.
There's a character he comes across where he's just bragging about all the adventures he's been on before.
Okay.
You know, so in that aspect, you're like, oh, that's cool. And if anything, it makes you go, well, shit, I want to play that. You know? So there you have it. Like, if I had to give it a rating, it'd be an easy 5 stars out of 5 stars. Is it the best thing I've ever played? No, but it's one that I would want to play again later on down the line. It makes me want to replay the entire series. Naughty Dog has been doing a great job in creating these stories and games that make you really involved into the story. The new Tomb Raider relaunch that they're doing, fantastic. The Last of Us, which I'm not sure is Naughty Dog or not, but I'm going to say so because it plays exactly almost like Uncharted, but the storyline is better. So all these games that have come out with this type of storyline, this type of gameplay, and this type of character building is a lot of fun. I did notice, though, a lot of times while you're playing this game, you're not playing alone. You actually have a sidekick or somebody that that's tagging along with you at all times. So it's kind of fun. The game does come with a multiplayer option. I did not get into that. For multiplayer, I kind of play Call of Duty, and I'm cool with that. And I play a lot of Call of Duty, so I play these games to get away from the multiplayer aspect and enjoy the campaign and story mode. So there you have it. If you get a chance, pick it up, give it a play, especially on the PlayStation 4. I think it's worth it.
All right. And moving on from Uncharted 4, we've got, DC animated feature that AJ and I both had the opportunity to check out. Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders. Now, I don't want to go full-on editorial right off the bat. Let me just say it was a fun ride. Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders is a throwback Batman. It's not your modern Batman. It's not the Bruce Wayne that you've seen since the 90s. It is old-school Adam West Batman with Adam West actually voicing Batman. So you've got your 1950s Cadillac Batmobile. You've got the ridiculous quips and just the overall campiness of it. That's the Batman that Return of the Caped Crusaders is.
Yeah, it is Batman 66 in an animated form.
There you go.
It has all the original, well, the remaining living voice actors from the original TV series, Burt Ward. I can't remember her name. Julie Newmar, there you go. And yeah. Adam West reprising their roles, but in a more vocal point. The story is kind of a simple story. Anthony, why don't you tell them about the story there?
The basic story for this one is Batman's enemies, so the Joker, the Riddler, the Penguin, and Catwoman, have all teamed up to, you know, run rampant over Gotham. They've got their crime wave, and they're trying to get into full swing. And as they're kicking off, which they happen to do on Gotham's most popular variety TV show, you know, they can't even get started without Batman jumping into the fray because, hey, they publicized it like that. So it is Batman and Robin trying to prevent them from wreaking havoc on Gotham and having their way with things and all of the twists and turns that that entails. That's a very broad overview, but I think it covers the salient points at least.
You have a broad overview.
I can't even process that one. But
I was going to say you're an overview broad, but that'd be like a derogatory term toward females, and I don't want to compare them to you in that manner.
Moving forward.
Random thoughts from the gallery here.
This experience is nothing like what we've had as far as DC animated Batman goat features for the last 5 to 10 years. I mean, I grew up watching old school Batman, 60s Batman on Nick at Night, you know? So I grew up with the camp. I grew up with I can't think of the term. The literary alliterations, the word choices that are made, and
the massive amounts of metaphors and similes.
Yes, those are there as well. And this, I will say, it was fun. But I will also say that I did not realize, having grown up watching it on Nick at Night and whatnot, that the camp gets to you after a while. So, you know, your original Batman, you had 22 minutes with commercial breaks, give or take. So the camp in a 22-minute sitting doesn't really affect you. Watching this after like 40 minutes, I'm like, wow, okay, just tone it down just a little and keep going. It doesn't detract from it because it's part of this Batman. But if you're not used to it, you might end up looking at it and going, really? Did he have to say that? Did he have to do it that way? Couldn't they have gone about this in a more logical fashion? Or did we have to have that whole drawn out metaphor to describe this? But it is what it is. And I think one of the important points to this is that it's probably the first truly family friendly animated Batman that we've had in a good little while.
Right. It's going back to a point real quick. I think that in terms of overcamp and what have you, I think it depends also on the experience that you had. Where Anthony watched this streaming at home, I went and saw it in the theater. And while I do agree that with Anthony on that overcampness, like the really, dude, did you really just do that? I do believe that because I was seeing it in a movie theater with a whole bunch of other people and hearing their laughter, it became infectious and I became a lot more forgiving of that. So I think maybe in that case, even as much as I got to enjoy a couple features that Anthony did not get to see, and when I saw it, we saw the opening was Kevin Smith and Greg Grunberg doing his Geeks Place podcast show in front of the movie as a little introduction to what you were about to see. And then at the end of the movie, we got a making-of video, almost a quasi-documentary-style video, telling about how everybody got together and it showed the original cast and what have you talking and working together. So I think because of that, it made it a little bit more forgiving for me to deal with all the camping and whatnot. It definitely made it worth my $13 that I paid, whereas know, I believe Anthony paid like $1.99 or something like that. But so I think in that aspect, I was a little bit more forgiving of the camp and whatnot. But believe me, there is a lot. But there's also stuff that you that takes you back and makes you think, because you realize that how different this Batman is from the current Batman that we are experiencing. You know, one of the things that Anthony and I had talked about before was, you know, you see this Batman park his car across the street, use a crosswalk, and go in the front door of the police station and is greeted by everybody there. You know, where Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara can't actually function without them. Which is different than what we see now, whereas Batman just shows up, he's a wraith. You know, he's just a shadow. And just shows up randomly, and it disappears without notice, which is something they also show in this film once and describe it how creepy it was for them to deal with it.
It truly was jarring, I guess, is the best way to describe it. To realize that Batman's not this vigilante on the run from the law in Gotham City. He works hand in hand with Gotham's police department, and he's someone that they're in certain instances completely dependent on to solve certain crimes. It's like, okay, so let's see, this Batman is not the Dark Knight.
No,
that's the best way I can think of
putting it. This man is the duly appointed servant of the law, or I can't remember what the exact wording, how they put it, but they are public servants.
Yeah, he is officially authorized by Gotham PD to do the crime fighting that he does.
And thus, in turn, represents the Gotham PD and the citizens of Gotham at the same time. So, whereas, you know, Bruce Wayne nowadays, or Batman nowadays, can beat an opponent until he's broken but not dead, this Batman is satisfied with a knockout punch.
Yeah. That wasn't the only thing that was jarring. I mean, you forget, you become so accustomed to the tech and all the gadgets and everything, and you've got the red phone. I mean, you've got literally running through places, going door to door, and it's like, okay, so Batman is, I guess this Batman seems more grounded in day-to-day human activity. It's an interesting way to look at Batman, and it's been a long time since he's been portrayed in such a fashion.
And I don't think they have the backstory in that, you know, his parents passed away in such a grisly fashion, or that's a tormenting dream and thought that he has to live with on a day-to-day basis. So maybe that's the different, that's what causes the different, whatever the reason is that you're totally getting into a different world of Batman.
Yeah, it's a completely different Batman. But it was still a fun ride. Now, I think AJ may have hit the nail on the head here, and it may be more fun surrounded by other people in a theater where you can, you know, where the infectious laughter at the camp and whatnot, you can kind of ride it out. But it is still a fun ride watching it by yourself, as I did. So, and hey, kid-friendly. It's been a while. It really has.
Which, in its own right, because of that, the whole family can watch it, and in that case, maybe get the whole audience infectious laughter appeal of it at that time. You know, you can have, you know, some kids come over and watch this as a babysitting tool like is done nowadays and not have to worry about it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So there you have it. That was our review of Uncharted 4 and Batman the Return of the Great Crusaders. So why don't we go ahead and take another break, or our final break, and we'll be back to say our goodbyes right after this.
Hello everyone, this is Anthony White of the Panelcast, asking you to check out my bi-monthly column, Messages from the Ether, on the Forbidden Panel website. It's a column about my adventures at conventions, as well as my experiences playing new and old video games and experiencing new anime. That's Messages from the Ether, only on ForbiddenPanel.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the panel cast, our final segment, the time where we have to say goodbye to you guys and weep lonely, lonely tears. Anthony?
All right, before we actually sign off, I got a couple of things for you. First off, this upcoming Saturday, October 15th, FP will be hosting its 12-hour Create Something Day. That is from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. On Saturday. Sorry, my tongue just sort of tied itself there.
I had nothing to do with it, I swear.
And if you've been to one of these before, you know what they're all about. If you have not, it's just a chance for everybody to get together and work on something creative. Finish that story you've been trying to crank out. Finish inking that picture that you just want to show off. It's a chance to meet up with other creative people to just sort of dedicate a block of time to making something for yourself and getting that project done. It doesn't have to be comic book related. Okay, AJ's got something to say.
And yeah, like Anthony was saying, it doesn't have to be comic book related, but it's also an opportunity for you to ask for help with any of the projects that you may have, ask for a second pair of eyes, ask for anybody's opinion and whatnot, because that's what we're there for. We don't judge. We don't give you shit. We just give you honest critiques of what your product is and help you out if we can. We have a kitchen, so we make food. You can come and make food.
That qualifies as creating something.
Yep. You can work on a song. You can write a script. You can play with Anthony's dreadlocks or make new ones. Just all kinds of fun stuff.
So that is this Saturday, October 15th at the clubhouse. If you need directions, there is a Facebook event that you can find through the FP Facebook page. And we'd also like to send a big thank you out to Wonder Comics for allowing this month's Inland Empire Comic Book Club to meet there and hold our meeting there. Thank you for that, guys. It was a great time. And if you haven't made it out to a comic book club meeting, even if you aren't a big fan of comic book clubs, I recommend you make the time, make it out. Even if you don't have the books read, even if you haven't gotten through them, it's still fun to meet up with people and just sort of geek out for a little while.
Also, if you are in the Inland Empire area and you want to pick up this month's reading list, you can head over to Wonder Comics and tell them you're part of the book club and you'll get a discount on the books.
Which is also awesome. So, thank you again, Wonder Comics, for being a big supporter of the Inland Empire Comic Book Club. And, wow, I think that's all I got. Apart from telling all of you that are listening to this, check out FP at our website, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Tumblr,
on Dasher, on Donner.
Yes. All over the interwebs and anywhere else that we might be able to get a presence. Trust me, we're working on it. So, for AJ, this is Anthony, signing off. See you all again in a couple of weeks.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.